The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Michael T. Rupert. It is April 17th, 2011. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. We've got a good guest and energetically a real appropriate one to have on tonight. Scott McGuire is going to be on with us in a few minutes. Scott Allen McGuire, a.k.a. Hawkeye, one of the most amazing organic gardeners and farmers I have ever seen in my life. We're going to talk about some stuff he's done that has had a couple of 100,000 hits on YouTube. He's going to put us in a much better mood than the world would have us be in if we thought about all that bad stuff. But we got to let's do a little update here, catching up from last week. The World News Desk at CollapseNet, that's www.collapsenet.com. That's my website where we are helping each other as share as much information as rapidly as possible so that we can get through this madness. But the World News Desk there is now posting a really steady stream of stories already sounding alarms about the first quarterly earning reports post-Fukushima. We've had like five or six in the last week, and they're growing. Alcoa, a Dow 30 component's already in trouble. And why? Because aluminum is used in cars and airplanes, and those things aren't being made. That's complexity for you. American, British, and German press are already issuing a flood of stories warning about serious losses in those countries. So I think the reality of what's happening is setting in. As I was said in my alert at CollapseNet recently, my emergency action alert, this is just going to change the whole world in a heartbeat. Japan is a gaping wound to a vital organ of human industrial civilization, and I believe that to be a mortal wound. The whole body is going to suffer enormously. We can't walk around without livers or lungs or hearts or things like that. And Japan, with the third largest economy in a globalized world, was a vital organ. So stick with us on the World News Desk. I've been making more comments there as the situation, as all the situations become clear. And just to sum up, Middle East and North Africa is still in complete, absolute, crazy tumult. People are being shot left and right. The Libya circus continues, gets worse. More signs of instability between Iran and Saudi Arabia, or within Saudi Arabia, too. And it's now becoming clear, as I've been telling you on the World News Desk, that that Iran is a major player behind the scenes, and that's the ultimate rivalry in that region between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and we hope that doesn't go crazy. The economic news is all still bad. Everything continues to be out of control and worse. So we're adjusting to a new normal. But the one story that really stuck in my mind this week was from Bloomberg on April the 13th. It says, TEPCO seeks to start reactor idled in 2007 as crews battle Fukushima leaks. The quote, that was a quote. And now it turns out that this reactor that they want to restart was shut down because of an earthquake. I don't think the seismic activity is anywhere near over, and there is just some real... this is like a heroin addict dying of an overdose in the emergency room, and he's trying to desperately get a hold of another fix. I don't know. This makes me real uneasy. We did put up a very interesting piece that's a must-read on the homepage at CollapseNet from Financial Sense, and they've been doing good work for a long time. This is a story by Russ Winter, and catch this. This is from a study from the International Monetary Fund. Every 10% increase in global food prices equates to a 100% increase in anti-government protests, according to a recent report, which is linked right there in the story. You can go to right to IMF and read it. It's how these guys think. Looking at recent increases in foodstuff commodities up to a total of 45% since the arrival of QE2 last year, which we were all over at CollapseNet. It's no wonder there are revolutions, civil wars, and riots breaking out across the globe. According to the IMF, a 45% increase in foodstuffs should quadruple the levels of unrest, and that seems to be precisely what's happening. It's nice to have little very helpful predictive insights like this, because food prices are continuing to just head for the moon and beyond. 45% increase in grains this year, something like that. It's absurd. And droughts are setting in, and we are far away from having the bumper harvest that we were told we needed to avoid massive starvation this year, and there's more stories fleshing that out all the time. So it really is time to do things that are going to get you ready, and one of the things that Hawkeye, when I bring him on in a minute, is going to tell you is that now is... If you want to eat in December, you better start thinking about it in April and May. He's a master at that. I'll let him discuss that, but that's a good point. But now here's something good. I had a great day today here in Sebastopol. The weather's beautiful. We've had no radiation beeps. So clearly all this stuff is windborne. You don't have to worry about sustained exposure. By the way, I strongly recommend that you can go through NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or other websites, and you can Google a local online radiation detection station, and you can just click it, and it's giving you real-time readouts, and looks to be pretty helpful. Check to see what's available near you. That's a good thing to do. But I had a beautiful day today. I went shooting and worked on the yard a little bit, and I really enjoyed being here in the country looking at some of the stuff we've just planted. And I watched the best video today. It's called Farming with Nature, a case study of successful temperate permaculture. 2000. It was made in 2000. Farming with Nature, a case study of successful temperate permaculture. It's about 37-38 minutes about this guy in Austria. And you just have to watch it to see what can be done when you work with nature instead of against it. It's mind-blowing to watch. And as you watch it, I'll tell you how I reacted. The more I saw how much was being accomplished with permaculture there, the more I realized how stupid I have been as a human being in terms of my understanding of this planet. So that's an appropriate lead into where we're going now. Scott Allen McGuire, a.k.a. Hawkeye, is an organic farmer. He's a gardener. He's a landscaper whose passion is simply to help people bring their own food into the world. He teaches ongoing skill-building classes like Eat Your Yard. I like that, Eat Your Yard. And has a brand-new instructional DVD called Backyard Sustainable Gardening with Scott Allen McGuire. And I'm watching it now. We're watching it here, and we're using it as we plant. And, man, it is so helpful to lead us city slickers through this process, which is really turning out to be fun. Hawkeye has recently had his gardens featured in an interview with Peak Moment Television called An Experiment in Backyard Sustainability, which remains their most popular episode to date. Oh, this is the one, with nearly 200,000 hits on YouTube. He blogs weekly about the current state of the food and consults with emergent food producers and community builders to help them get off the ground, and he's doing a great job. Or he says, get them more grounded, which is often the case, absolutely. The DVD Backyard Sustainable Gardening with Scott Allen McGuire, a.k.a. Hawkeye, is available on his website as a complete set, and you can download individual lessons there as well. And I also have to tell you that Hawkeye is probably one of the best friends I've ever had in my whole life. I met him up in Ashland, Oregon, and he has just continued to amaze me. So it's really cool when I have really good friends who are also really, really good at what they do. Hawkeye, are you there?
Mike, with an introduction like that, man. Yo, I'm here.
All right.
Yes.
So, tell us how this DVD that you have, Backyard Sustainable Gardening, breaks down. How do you break down the lessons in there?
Well, there's 9 lessons on there. It's a 2-disc set. And what I tried to do was put myself in the position of somebody who's walking into their backyard for the first time, like a lot of us are now. This is the year, like you said, you know. What do I need to do here to really get some food out of this? And there's a lot of stress around that. There's a lot of anxiety. You know, as if there wasn't enough stress in the world. A lot of people don't have these skills. It's a brand new thing. So I put myself in the position to say, all right, what do people want to know that's going to reduce the level of anxiety and make this fun? Because, you know, your garden's supposed to be your sanctuary. It's supposed to be your respite place away from the madness, where you can grow your own food and create your own sanity bubble, you know, your little green sanity bubble back there.
Mm-hmm.
So I took some very basic approaches. I started with tools because, especially for a lot of men who aren't gardeners, you know, we can relate to tools, right? So what are the good tools? What makes a good garden tool? And then from there, the essentials of soil building, because really it starts with the soil. I tell
And starting with tools was really useful for us because we went out and got all the tools, you know, as we were watching everything else, and you're right. Having the right tools when you do this makes it a lot easier. Anyway, go ahead.
Yes. Well, it's true because it's not that it's supposed to – it's not easy, you know. It's kind of tricky. It's kind of difficult, hard, sweaty work. So that, in a way, the tools are absolutely essential so that you don't build in regret and grudge around your work. You know, it's got to be satisfying if it's not immediately enjoyable.
Okay.
And it's really foundational. I wanted to talk about the principles, you know, because if I tell people, forget about growing plants. You know, everybody thinks, oh, I got to grow these plants. What should I feed them? Well, there's
Let
no
me give out
thing
the call out, the call-in information, so anybody wants to can ask you a question. If ask Scott Allen McGuire, Hawkeye, anything about gardening, and I have eaten from his table, I have seen his gardens, and they're just amazing. You can call in at 1-888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, or email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. Now, Hawkeye, you got to be careful here because we might get questions from all over the map.
No, that's true. That's true, and that's good. And that's one of the limitations of my thing. I'm on the West Coast here, and every garden area has its different challenges. What I try to do is present just a very basic principle so people who are just getting into it have their questions answered and can feel confident moving forward.
Okay. We do have a question already.
Okay.
Thank you. This is from Chris. Hi, Mike. Hawkeye. I have questions for you both, if that's okay. Yes, it is. First, Alan, I guess that's you, Scott, Hawkeye. See, I just call him Hawkeye. What would be your suggestions for a natural pesticide? Also, what would you suggest to keep away groundhogs, deer, rabbits, etc.?
Your cool kiss running to meet mine.
I talked to the board in New York by instant messaging, and the exact same thing happened twice in a row, and he was sitting there watching it, and he didn't understand what had happened, and it happened at exactly the same point. He'll give me a signal here as soon as he gets Hawkeye back up again.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, well, look,
That's weird.
Some of you are going to think it, and I'm going to say it. The same thing like this doesn't happen twice at the same time in the same show at exactly the same point. Take it for what it's worth. So what do we have to worry about? The end of human industrial civilization? But, and I'm hearing stories that a lot of us out here who are telling the truth have been suffering lately. Gary got hacked last week, I'm told, Gary Null. I know of several other kindred sites that have been having problems. I don't think that's going to stop us from doing what we do. I don't think it's going to change our hearts or our minds, and I sure don't think it's going to intimidate any of us because we have nothing to lose. Somebody has got to keep doing the right thing out here for as long as it takes and as long as we're able to do that. So, Scott, Hawkeye, without any further ado, let's try it a third time to see if we can get this question answered. What would you suggest?
Maybe somebody don't want me to talk about those insects, man.
Yeah, you have to watch out for those subversive deer and rabbits, you know?
Oh, dear. No. It's true. There's a lot with the insects now, not so much with the rodents, but just with the insects. All the populations of the so-called pests have really gotten way out of balance. Now, the way to get them back into balance it isn't through the same type of thinking like, well, what's the natural pesticide? Well, any word with the IDE on the end of it is a wipeout thing, and that's not how nature works, see?
Right.
So what I'm saying is grow habitat, grow the plants and shrubs that will support the beneficial insects. And really all you have to do is just provide that habitat through the things that you grow, and those beneficial insects will show up because what you're calling a pest, somebody else calls a food supply. And you want that somebody else to stick around in your garden, see? And you actually don't want the so-called pest thing to disappear. Like, really, if you had every single aphid magically disappear from your garden, well, what would all the ladybugs eat, right? They'd all leave. And then what would happen? Well, then the big aphids would show up again. So you want to keep all the various insect populations in balance. And that's the way of thinking now that really, which we need to try on for everything.
All right. I got a question, too, because you've been to my place and you walked around and you knew every plant that was on these 2 acres that's sloped. And we've got strawberries and some other things in the ground. Well, we got a big bed we're getting ready to plant. It's a little late for potatoes, I think. But we have gopher holes, and I'm watching this progression of gopher holes coming up the hill toward this bed, and we haven't even planted anything yet. What do you do with that?
Yeah, the march of the gophers. You know, they're tricky. There have to be various levels of discouragement, and if you only have one little bed in your backyard, well, make sure it's got a little wire liner in it, you know. Other things you can do is you can plant little trap crops, something for them, and say, look, here's your thing, and we're going to stay over here. A lot of times that
works. What do they like?
Little root crops. A lot of these like to eat worms and things, so you need to create a healthy border for them.
Okay.
You might have to trap them. You might have to get a good cat. I always recommend a good barn-type cat, you know, a good mouser cat, because a good cat that could catch gophers is really valuable.
All right. I'm looking for a cat. Okay, so Alan was asking about deer and rabbits.
Yes. Deer, you know, you just got to build a fence because the deer are super out of balance, too. And there's deer repellent-type things are all going to wash off with the rain or regular watering. They're not any sort of permanent solution. In a way, the way I approach the garden is you're creating a context to create balance in. And if you're going to have deer constantly moving in and out of there, they're going to hammer it so bad you're never going to get any context to create balance in. So if deer pressure is heavy, I'm telling people just build a fence right away. You're not going to regret it, and it's going to be able to protect your experiment for more than a few years.
All right. Now, he had a question for me. It seems that lately the economic problems have surpassed the peak oil problems. So that being said, I have two questions. Well, first, I would disagree, Alan. They're two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
Actually, a multi-sided coin because you throw in overpopulation. I mean, so They aren't two separate issues. One, do you think the crash in July 11 will cripple the economy beyond repair? Absolutely do. Yes. Yes. That's exactly the scenario that I described in the documentary Collapse from Blue Mark Films, where I said we go off the cliff when oil prices spike and nobody can afford to buy that oil. That this is exactly what I was describing them, and yes, there is no coming back. Two, when do you predict the global faith will be lost in the U.S. dollar? Well, it's already been lost. I don't think it's not a question, Alan, of who has faith in the dollar. They're trying to find ways to get rid of it, and that's the tricky problem. But it's well underway. It's well underway. Okay, now I got a question from Scott, another Scott. He said, two questions. I've got a small rainwater collection system set up. I live in North San Diego County to water my raised bed veggie garden. Any issues with radiation in the rainwater? Good question. Should I just be using tap water instead? Second, I'm going to start composting, use worms, or just let other bacteria break down the material. I picked up one of those tumblers from Costco the other day. Let's take the first one. What about radiation in the rainwater, Hawkeye? Because we posted on the World News Desk at CollapseNet last week that the French government had advised pregnant women in France to stop eating leafy vegetables and drinking milk. So, you know, that's enough to really get your attention. What are you doing, and what do you suggest people do with that?
Well, okay, radiation's a whole big new package, and there's a whole lot of fear around all that stuff. I wanted to ask a fellow what type of roof he's got right now. You see, because if you're pulling a cistern or rain catchment off of a roof with an asphalt roof tile, then you're getting all sorts of nasty chemicals in that water, and it's no good. Roof catchment with metal roofs or tile roofs are best, eh? So I'm going to question whether or not they've got toxics going into their water barrel just straight off the roof, Scott. It's kind of serious. Not all roofs, practically most roofs, I don't think, are adapted for an immediate rainwater catchment thing.
We are looking into the radiation issue at CollapseNet. Mm-hmm. We've already posted several stories on that. We're looking more deeply into radiation detectors. We just got one here for the house. But I'm not sure how you test water. There's different testing procedures involved. Mm-hmm. We're looking into that. But in our Lighthouse directory at CollapseNet, which is absolutely free, there's 1,220 hand-picked listings there. You will find some listings in there for radiation detection devices, which can help you test your water. And, you know,
yeah,
I'm not convinced the seismic activity in Japan is over, and certainly TEPCO. I mean, they're doing the BP when they say 6 to 9 months to achieve cold shutdown. They're not. That's not possible. But we know that they've been lying already, and things could get a lot worse, and probably will, especially if, as a result of collapse, mankind fails to achieve a cold shutdown of every nuclear reactor on the planet before we're no longer able to do that. So, I would strongly recommend getting radiation detection devices. Start with the Lighthouse directory. We've got a lot of stuff that'll help you there, and that's free on CollapseNet. Okay, now his second question was, composting. Does he use the wormy worms, or does he let other bacteria break down the materials?
Well, it's both and. You know, a lot of those tumblers are only going to work to, there's a lot of gizmos out there, and you don't need a lot of infrastructure to make good compost. What you do need is good microbial activity.
Right.
So I'd suggest they use a really good compost starter, and worms are great. Worms will migrate into a pile from wherever you are if you fork the ground up where you build the pile. And you see, I find a lot of the bacterial and the worm populations and all the bugs and goodies that mix up and eat up and decompose good compost, they come right out of the ground where you build a pile. And so you can't really get advantage of all those what's there if you're putting it all up in a big barrel thing that spins around. You have to add everything yourself.
Okay.
And it can be done, and sometimes it works really well in compact places. But I find if you just make a freestanding pile, and this is what I show people how to do that in the DVD, the whole chapter on composting, is all about building.
We're going to roll right through the station break here because of the downtime. I just had to acknowledge that. And Hawkeye Man, we got the questions piling up here.
Oh, good, good.
We have Bill from Portland on the phone. Are you there, man? Is Bill there?
Yeah.
Hey, you're on with me and Hawkeye.
Right on. Hey, I got a question for you later, Mike, but for you, Hawkeye here, I'm kind of following the John Jeavis, if I've got that name right. I'm following his how to grow more vegetables on less space than you ever thought imaginable. That book, I'm kind of following it to a T. The biointensive method of agriculture. Would you recommend that?
Yeah, sure would. You know, Jevons, he's one of many different what I call plant relationship systems, you know, the Jevons biointensive systems. And Jevons has a lot of good stuff. A lot of his numbers are extrapolations. Please keep that in mind, okay? But a lot of his core techniques are really sound, especially the thing where he talks about, I mean, really, if you're following his plan, you'll know that he says like 60% of what you have to grow are compost plants, right, for the fertility of the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not
mm-hmm.
just about growing your food, it's about growing your fertility. And if people got that principle alone from Jevons, then they could do any other plant relationship system and it would make sense.
Okay, right on. And another question for you. I'm also, I've got some plants in smart pots. I'm using cocoa soil, and I'm trying to make my own fertilizers rather than going to the store and buying them. Is there any recommendations you would have for that?
Absolutely. Well, the peerless way to make your own fertile ground is through composting.
Okay.
So you get into a place where you'll be growing more and more diverse plants to add to the compost, and the compost gets richer by the diversity of plants that go into it, because especially if you're growing perennials and weeds and things, their roots are diving way down in the subsoil and mining up nutrients that have leached further down, you see. So as you grow those weeds and things and plants and put them in your compost, you're recycling all those nutrients back up to the root zones where your plants are going to be.
See, this guy knows what he's talking about. Bill, did you have a question for me?
Yeah, I do, Mike. And it's regarding a statement that you've made in your movie, Collapse. That there will be no left and there will be no right paradigm after the dust has settled. And I'm asking this question in relation to, I live in Portland, Oregon. My family is located in Salt Lake City, Utah. And, you know, there's obviously two very big different attitudes over there. And I really don't, once the dust settles or whatever, I really don't see them being equal. Do you really think that that the political environment won't in some way shape what things look after collapse?
I don't think anybody can conceive what the political environment's going to look like. There's a parable in the Bible that says you can't build a new house until you've torn down the old one. And that's the way it's going to be with this paradigm. It's going to have to die. It's going to have to die out. And what I've been saying consistently since the movie is that since it's this bad and we know it's this bad, and Japan has taken everything to a whole new dimension, the only thing you can do is get out of the way and survive. And when that point in time arrives, when collapse is over and there is some kind of stasis achieved again on this planet, those who emerge from wherever they are who have survived will be a completely different species of human being. I'm not one who wants to carry old grudges into a new paradigm, unless the only grudge I have is with infinite growth and the corrupt monetary paradigm. And the survivors will figure it out from there.
I'm just a little bit concerned that, you know, with the large percentage of Mormons in Salt Lake City, maybe they could use that to create their own kind of paradigm that they want to establish after their, someone more liberal like myself might not enjoy it.
Until that problem comes up, man. And you know what? Mormons have been helpful to me along the way, and we have members of LDS and Mormons who are members at CollapseNet. We welcome them all.
We just want to help people.
Oh, I have nothing against Mormons. I don't want to, you know, I just, I'm a little bit more of a hedonist than their taste. So,
yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, hey, thanks, you guys.
Okay, we have a bunch of questions lined up. Okay. This is a question from Rick Dawson. He says, "Hi, Mike and Hawkeye. We have more rabbits out here in the Midwest than Australia had in the 1960s. How do we protect our garden from them? What do you do with like a herd of stampeding jackrabbits, Hawkeye?"
Yikes. Well, I have no idea because I've never dealt with a herd. You know, but, you know, the mammals and the rodent families, they're getting out of balance, too, just like the insects.
Yeah.
You know, and they're in their cycles. One thing to keep in mind, too, that, you know, jackrabbits aren't really rabbits. They're hares. It's a totally different critter, and I didn't really realize that. I just found out. And there's some nasty disease, and I can't really pass it on to you. You know how the mice feces has a hantavirus? Well, there's some particular nasty disease that goes around with the hares, the wild hares. So you have to be very careful about eating wild game for various reasons. And the hares have another particular little glitch in them, so I'm not going to recommend you go and shoot the hares and eat them. You're going to have to keep them out of there somehow. And I'm thinking fencing. It's a disease, some type of disease, and I wish I could tell you exactly what it was. I don't remember.
Okay.
But there's a disease vector that's carried by wild hares that's different from, because the rabbits, true rabbits, don't carry it. But hares, jackrabbits, they're a different type of species, and they do carry it.
Okay.
So for people who say, well, if there's just too many of them, just shoot them, and then maybe end up eating some of them, well, that is a kind of a dicey proposition. I just wanted to
know. I have no answers for that. Maybe somebody will share that with us here at the Lifeboat Hour tonight, or get a hold of us at the CollapseNet. We'll put that up on the free side. That's a good solution. We'll put that in the
lineup.
You know,
it'd be really great at some point to have sort of a regional solutions garden type board, you know, where regional areas could say, oh, this is going on. What do other people do in this area about that?
Yes, yeah, that's it. Sharing information is critical. We've got many more questions, and they're really good ones.
Okay.
We have a question from Angeris One to Lifeboat Hour. Hi, guys. I live in the city. What precautions or recommendations would you have for the very novice city farmer who only has rooftop space 150 to 200 square feet, hoping to greenify to cut down on heat in the summer and cold in winter? Tell us what somebody in the city can do if they got a very small amount of land to work with.
Well, you know, it doesn't really matter if your rooftop is, I mean, how high up it is. You know, except for pumping water up there, you've got to have the power grid to get your resources up on the roof. But once you're up there, you can create your own little paradise up on the roof. You really have to investigate container gardening and importing soil. It's a different game, but you can be really productive on a rooftop. I'd also recommend getting bees. You know, there's a huge underground group. Bees, keeping beehives on top of your roof.
Okay.
You know, there's this vast, vast group of beekeepers in New York City, in Manhattan, and there are bees all over the rooftops up there. And for a long time, they were illegal, and I think they changed that law recently.
Of course.
So, but here's the point, though, Mike. It's not, people ask me, well, show me somebody who's growing 100% of their own food. Well, that's not the point. The idea is to grow as much of whatever you can and then trade with other people who have too much of whatever they happen to have. And it's through the networking and the trading of food neighbors that you really come up with 100%.
Let me go back to something that I wanted to ask about right when I brought you into the show. I talked about this really great permaculture video that I saw. And what's the difference between what you do and permaculture, or the similarity?
Yeah, well, no, I do a lot of permaculture. I mean, I'm a permaculture advocate. I integrate a whole lot of permaculture principles into what I do. But I call permaculture, it's another one of the plant relationship systems. You know, like we mentioned, the John Jevons system called biointensive. Well, permaculture is another vastly popular plant relationship system.
Yeah.
And it's got its great, great sides, and it's got its drawbacks. My problem with permaculture right now is it's largely in the design phase. There are millions of permaculture designers and not so many people that are actually putting it in the ground like your man in Austria there. So I'm into permaculture.
here's the thing about permaculture, though. It's talking about the climax forest of farming, essentially. How do we create landscapes that produce food largely through the trees?
Right.
And the way to do that, how to create an orchard culture or a tree culture, it's not something that you can create right out of the gate. I mean, nature doesn't create climax forest that way. You've got to go through your stages. And one of those stages is the annual garden, you know, just the regular old backyard garden stuff. And it's kind of held, the backyard garden of annuals is held in kind of low esteem among the permaculture cognoscenti, you see. They're much more evolved than that. But the truth is, there's an annual garden component that I feel is essential in any plant relationship system, including some of the more vast permaculture designs that are out there.
We are talking tonight to Scott Allen McGuire, a.k.a. Hawkeye, who is a master organic gardener, a Green Thumb, old dear friend of mine. I have eaten at his table. I have seen the bounty that he produces. He is the producer, director, star of Backyard Sustainable Gardening with Scott Allen McGuire, which you can find at his website, www.scottallenmcguire.com. We got another question from Dan Hill. Dan Hill. Well, there was a great song by a singer named Dan Hill a long time ago, Sometimes When We Touch, written by Barry Mann and I think Cynthia Weil. Anyway, and you may not be the same Dan Hill, but it's a cool name, and thank you for triggering him. Hi, Mike. I'm a soon-to-be graduating history student in the U.K. No, you're not the same guy. If I had known what I know now as a CollapseNet member when I began the degree, I'd have chosen something a little more practical. I know that you're getting into permaculture. I've just finished Sepp Holzer's autobiography. That's the guy in the video that I saw today. And it's one of the most inspiring things I've ever read. The guy grows lemons at 1,500 meters in the German Alps. My question is, what do you think will happen to land prices, especially in the U.K.? As come summer, I'm hoping to throw in with some like-minded but broke friends. Unless something big happens, we have no hope of getting more than an acre together. Keep on doing what you're doing, Dan. Well, thank you, Dan. I'll talk to the land prices. it's unclear what's going to happen here in the near immediate future. You might see land being priced in gold very soon. That just might be an absolute default switch after what's going to come this summer as the quarterly earnings statements come in with a full quarter after Fukushima. I'm renting where I am on 2 acres, and that's good because in my case that means that the people who own the land, and I have great landlords, are carrying the risk about that. So if you can rent, I think it's better to rent. And then you might wind up with squatter's rights, you know, by default too after a while. That's the best I can say. Scott, did that trigger anything for you?
Yeah, it triggered quite a few things. No. Come on. Now, really, no, I don't know squat about land values in the UK. But land values, to me, are totally right now disassociated. I mean, because they've been part of the real estate bubble. They're all... And it's been at the detriment of farming. I mean, really, how do you compare dollars per square foot to pennies per pound?
Absolutely.
I mean, they're different universes. So the value of property, say, has been really perverse for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
The true value of property now, we'll find out, has to do with what you can grow on it, and that has to do with how much water is there, too. So, you know, Mike, your comment about how land might be traded in gold, well, I've heard another thing recently is that another equivalent currency in times like that are seeds. You see, so if you were able to get on a piece of land this summer and grow a diverse crop of seeds, you could essentially grow future currency or have the capacity then to trade yourself with all the other people who don't have this or that and do have something else.
You could also present yourself to someone who has land and may not know what to do with it and say, I've got the best seeds. We have spent time collecting a good collection of heirlooms here. You went through our seed packs here.
Yes.
What was that seed pack?
We need to make a note of that, Mike. It's very important because a lot of the seeds, that hybrid seeds or plants that people buy out of the nurseries, if they try to save seeds from them, they will not get that type of plant. You've got to use open-pollinated or what's commonly called heirloom varieties, or varieties that are saved through families, through generations. Those are tried and true, and seeds that you save from them will become what's called true. It'll actually reproduce true to type.
All right. We got an email back from Scott, who emailed earlier. He was in North San Diego County about his roof. He says he has a concrete tile roof. So
okay.
What would you say to rainwater catchment from that?
Grab it. Get every drop, you know. Absolutely. I think rainwater catchment is going to be the way water happens in places like that in the future.
Okay. We have Steve in Tennessee on the line. Steve, are you there? Hello, Steve. Oh, I'm sorry. I can read. It says he did not want to be on the air. Can Hawkeye talk about... Hi, Steve. Can Hawkeye talk about biochar for beginners and how to do it on a small scale?
No, I can't, man. I'm going to talk you out of that. Forget about that. Come on now. It's been proven that that's not really going to happen very well unless you've really got the conditions where it evolved, and I think that was somewhere in South America.
Mm-hmm.
No, really, just work on building compost. Grow deep-rooted plants and build compost and find a manure source because you're going to need some nitrogen to cook it all up.
Yeah.
And whatever you have, see, this is really all about rallying whatever the local resources are to create your own fertility. This is all about creating fertility wherever you happen to be. And I think that's why animals got a role in that. And not so much of the, what did that guy say? He was using the, basically any imported organic matter and fertility is going to disappear. So what are the local sources of organic matter and nitrogen?
Yeah, everything that I have read and what I'm practicing and what I'm learning from some dear friends I've had up here for a while, absolutely agrees with what you said. There is something so earth-connected when you keep things in their own biosphere,
yes,
their own ecosphere. We have a question from Rick Dawson. He says, "Hi, Mike and Hawkeye. Any suggestions about novice gardeners starting to garden in the Midwest? That's where they have those crazy rabbits. Do we start seeds outdoors or indoors or just use plants from greenhouse?" Joy Dawson.
Mm-hmm. At this point, if you're a novice gardener, I'm going to recommend that you purchase as many plants that are available at your nursery so that you can have the highest level of success with the most amount of things. Eventually, you're going to learn more about it and say, oh, I could do this or I could do that. Definitely try to sow some things from seed, but give yourself a break and let it be the easier things. You know, sow squash and beans and things that you're going to get success with. See, even though ultimately we're going to have to become our own nurseries, you know, we're going to have to share, grow plant stock for each other somehow. For right now, a lot of our plants just come off a truck, just like our groceries, you know. But if we can get success doing that, by planting the little starts this year, then that will get us that much further down that path, and we'll be able to do a lot more for ourselves next year.
Now, you covered that, Hawkeye, in your DVD.
Yes, yes.
We didn't really get through this before we had that technical problem. What are the 9 separate lessons that you cover in the DVD? Because you cover almost all of this stuff.
Well, yes, I wanted to cover the basics, but say enough things that would give people confidence to, here's a pattern, we'll just approach these from the principles. So I started out with the tools, you know, just the extensions of your hands, and then it's all about fertility, soil building from the ground up. Then we go to the greenhouse, and we talk about little baby plants and raising seedlings from seed and all the different parts of that. We go all through that, and... one of the lessons in there is about how you can run a CSA or a community supported agriculture garden in your backyard. It's like a market garden. Now a lot of farmers have that set up these days. You know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are members of some kind of a CSA.
Hawkeye, I'm going to interrupt you and forgive me, but we have a call from Brazil.
Oh wow!
I think we ought to take. Carla really? From Brazil is on the phone. I think she has he has a question about clayish soil. Are you there, Karma?
Yes, I am. Hey, Mike. How are you?
Cool, man. How are you?
One of the lessons in there is about how you can... So my question is, good friend of mine has about an acre and a quarter of land, and the soil is incredibly dense and very clay-like. It's very dark soil.
Turn the volume down on your radio,
for that type of soil? Is it better maybe just to build a box and fill it up with some other soil, or can you get into that soil and do something with it?
Yeah, Betty, you got to turn your radio down. We're hardly hearing your question. I think I got it, though.
I apologize. Hang on just 1 second for me.
Yeah, turn that way down, Karma, because there's a delay between when we say it and you hear it, and it's throwing everything off.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, but... Okay, Hawkeye, try to answer the question. Let me see if we can
do it.
Yeah,
maybe
we'll
that's not him.
We're in,
here,
in
here
London
you go. Here's
in 1940.
What I tell people if they got the clay soil, what they have to do is grow buckwheat. There's a cover crop called buckwheat. You grow that crop and let those roots fiberize that soil, and it'll be different next time.
Did you get that, Karma?
Yes, I did. Unfortunately, I'm having technical difficulties, but I'll try again.
Well, you wouldn't be alone. That's what happens with the collapse of human industrial civilization. Hang tough, man.
I'll tell you what. I'll send you an email. I apologize.
That's all right. Don't worry about it. We're going to get through this one, too. Okay, Hawkeye, I interrupted you. We've got about 7 minutes left.
Nice.
Finish going through the stages of your course, and I apologize for the frenetic nature of the broadcast today, but we've had some issues here. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it's just like gardening. It's just all wild anyway. So, yeah, no, I think that if he got my thing about buckwheat, anybody who's got heavy soils, they need to grow some buckwheat, and their life will be different, and it's wonderful. Basically, in the DVD series, I just run through the whole basic thing, but of all the very basic things that you would need to know, but there's from the level of principle. Now, I end it with a discussion about what I consider all, we've talked a little bit about these different plant relationship systems. Because a lot of people hear all these things, well, what is organic, and what is permaculture, and what's biointensive, well, all these different things. And so I talk about the different plant relationship systems. And the one that I actually use, which is one of the least well-known now, but I actually get onto a level where you can communicate with the plants directly through using muscle testing. It's called co-creative gardening. And that's a whole other chapter. That's the DVD I'm working on this summer.
Oh, can't wait to see that. I got to tell you, I'm watching these DVDs, and they are so good. They're so helpful. They make it, you know, it's like you actually think you can do this if you've never really done it before. We got one more question down to the last 5 minutes. Though this is Anjaris Juan, who just said, thank you, Mike. Hawkeye, I didn't think about bees. Does Hawkeye's book discuss setting up rooftop gardens? Is it actually deck space now and has a water, if it is actually deck space now and has a water supply? This is the second question, so tag on after everyone else gets a chance. Thank you. I love those kind of attitudes on Lifeboat Hour.
We're that's sweet.
Go, Hawkeye.
It's really all about containers. You've got to become adept at managing your containers and your exposures to sunlight and how tall your plants are going to get, because plants will shade others out, and that might be a good thing if you're trying to grow a little shady lettuce in the summer, say. What you really need to pay attention to with containers, though, is the watering pattern. And if you want to set up any automation like with drip, it's not going to be enough because the root ball will shrink and the water will run down the side, just like will happen with your potted plant, right? Then you need to set it in the sink so the root ball swells up again. You've got to keep the root ball swollen in container planting, whether you're on a rooftop or on a deck.
Okay,
that's the biggest challenge.
We have two more quick callers right here at the end of the show. Let's see if we can do it. Rob from New York, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Mike and Hawkeye.
Hey.
I live in New York, but I got a little hobby farm up in Saugerties, New York.
Yeah.
And we got great soils. And we got good corn and bush beans and zucchini and the rest. But how do I keep the deer out? What's your best solution for keeping deer out?
You got to fence them. You really do.
Yeah.
So I saw this a netting-like fence, and it's like is 9 feet or 12 feet? What do you recommend for the height?
Oh, yeah, no. 9's really overkill. Hell, just go with 7.
Really?
I mean, I don't think, unless you've got monster deer back there going to jump 7 feet, 8 is going to be the, I mean, I don't think you need that extra footage up there after 8 at the most.
Okay, could you recommend any company or any type that's, you know, it's
you know,
see-through or something, or barge through?
Well, sure,
or?
You know, it's just, what it's going to come down to is going to be a budget issue. You know, of course, the metal fencing is going to be stronger and beefier, is going to last longer. But there are a lot of more vinyl mesh fencing materials that are decent these days that are really tough too. So, and they're a lot cheaper.
Okay, Rob, we have to move along. We got one more call, and we got like about 2 minutes left. I want to see if we can talk to Jay from New York. Are you there?
My question is about 401k plans. What you're saying about the economy doesn't sound too good. If you have a loan out on your 401k, what happens if, like, the market collapses and your 401k is no longer there? And about putting in raised beds, garden beds, how high should they be?
Okay. If you're in a 401k, now get out by any means possible. Get whatever you can get out, because that's all you're ever going to get from it. That's my advice for that. Hawkeye, raised beds, we got about 1.5 minutes left.
Oh, plenty of time for raised bed. 12-inch boards or whatever you have. I mean, you don't have to use boards. If you're going to use boards, 12 by 2 lumber would suffice. And then you don't want to fill the soil up to the very brim, kind of like a potted plant. You want to leave a little lip there. But remember also that the first year you fill that bed, you can fill it a little too full that you might think would be too full because that soil is going to settle. Yeah,
okay.
Also, if you're going to have critters, if you have any gophers or anything, before you fill that bed, staple some hardware cloth or some wire mesh down underneath there. Mm-hmm. Then you know there's no gophers or anything going to come burrowing up inside.
Good.
There.
Going to make it. We just got an email right as we close out the show. What a great show tonight, Hawkeye. Thank you so much. Everybody, check out ScottAllenMaguire.com. It's the best $30 you ever spent for something that'll take you from start to finish and just about everything you need to know about growing food. And we got an email from a CollapseNet member, Donnie Harris. Hawkeye, I want to know if you've heard of this. He writes, human hair around the garden has always worked for me to keep the deer out. You ever hear of that, Hawkeye?
Oh, my gosh. I did that one time, only I didn't use my hair. I went down to the barbershop, and I got a bunch of hair off the barbershop. Now, who's in the barbershop? It's a bunch of deer hunters. Okay, so I spread the deer hunter hair everywhere, and it pissed the deer off so bad they ate all my plants.
On that note, ladies and gentlemen, from the Three Stooges School of Survival in a nightclub at the end of the world, man, this has been another great show with my dear friend Hawkeye Scott Maguire, and we will be back with you next week on the Lifeboat Hour, and let's hope we're not all glowing. See you next week, guys. Happy birthday, Dougie.